This is considered one of the best debut albums of all time. Nice choice, Dan.
Oh yeah.
And it is indeed part of this list of the 100 best debut albums of all time, according to Rolling Stone. And I want to hear from you guys. What are some of your favorite first albums, your favorite debut albums? 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Nick DiGilio here. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here until 5 o'clock. Talk and text 312-981-7200 for best debut albums of all time. You can also follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show and stay connected with us on Facebook at facebook.com/Nick D Show. So let's get into it. Appetite for Destruction. That's the record, Guns N' Roses, we just heard from there. That comes in all the way up. Dan, you know where it comes in on this list? Dan's getting a phone call. Here, let me, I just want to make sure that he knows how high up this one was. Because he chose the song to play. And it turns out that it is actually number four. The fourth best debut album of all time, according to the people at Rolling Stone. The biggest selling debut album from the 80s, the biggest hard rock game changer since Led Zeppelin IV, Appetite for Destruction, features a lot more than the yowl of Indiana-bred Axl Rose. Guitarist Slash gave the band blues emotion and punk energy, while the rhythm section brought the funk on its hits such as Welcome to the Jungle. When all the elements came together, as in the final 2 minutes of Paradise City, GNR left all other 80s metal bands in the dust, and they knew it too. So, number four. There you go. 312-981-7200. Dan, it came in at number four, Appetite for Destruction, on the list.
Yeah, I was going to say, I hope it was high up there.
Yeah.
I glanced at the list, but...
number four. I mean, that's nothing to sneeze at right there.
No.
So that album was massive. If people don't remember back in 87 when that thing came out, man, oh, man. It was everywhere. Everywhere. So, all right. 312-981-7200. Let's see. They include on this list The Fame by Lady Gaga. She comes in at number 100. Her first album came out in 2009. There she goes. She's Lady Gaga, and Stephanie Germanotta's album arrived in August of 2008 to a shrug from radio programmers and radio buyers. By the spring of 2009, though, Lady Gaga was famous indeed. Gaga's debut was a game changer, making dark, booming dance pop buoyed by the almighty four on the floor thump of Euro disco, the dominant sound of the global charts. It introduced the world to an outrageously plus size form of pop divadom, and to a provocateur and fashion plate who treated the whole world as a red carpet. Those paparazzi she sang about weren't metaphorical after all. That's The Fame. All right, let's see. We got some people calling in. If you guys want to jump in, what do you think are some of the best debut albums of all time? There's a lot to choose from here, and some real classics. Here's Mark on WGN. Hey, Mark.
Green from Cleveland.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. By the way, have you done this topic before?
I don't think we've ever done this topic before.
Okay. Cool. Because, well, I have a couple of sort of obscure suggestions for you, but they are great albums to anyone who's familiar with them. First is The Modern Dance by Per Ubu.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just a brave album all the way around. I mean, Chuck Berry guitar riffs, white noise synthesizer, punk rhythms, and one of the most unique vocalists in rock and roll. It's just an incredible album.
Yeah, I think you're required by being from Cleveland to include Para Ubu. I think that's a requirement.
Well, if they were Rick, I'd love them no matter what city they were from.
Yeah, okay.
Just as I love, you ever hear of Team Dress?
No.
Okay, they were an all-lesbian punk band from the 90s. They had a couple albums out. Their first was called Personal Best, and it is a stunner. I mean, it's a great pop-punk riot girl thing throughout, and really the way the two singers contrast in their singing and writing is reminding of, I know you're going to give me grief for saying this, Lennon and McCartney.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because you have one who does a lot of the heavier topics, and you have the other who usually has a charming croon but can really scream if you want to. It's like Paul did when he was doing the Little Richard stuff. And it's a great album, and not enough people know about it, and it's well worth seeking out.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Mark.
You have a great show.
All right. Take care. There you go. We've got some more people who are calling in, and we're talking about best debut albums. There are so many to choose from here. And by the way, Jim Ryan chose Boston and the Cars, which are both pretty high on the list here as debut albums. And those records were huge. There were so many hits off of the Cars' first album and off of Boston's first album. Just came out of nowhere and just blew up. So here's Eve on WGN. Hi, Eve.
Hi, how you doing?
Okay.
The Sponge Riding Pinata and Real Life Let Send Me an Angel.
Real Life. I saw Real Life open up for the Eurythmics back in the day when their album first came out, and they were terrific. And that's a really good record, the first Real Life record. It's a great one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, Eve. Thanks.
Sure.
Yeah, Real Life. Man, not a lot of people know about that band. That was one of those new wave 80s bands that they just had the one hit, Send Me an Angel, which was a pretty big hit. Yeah. Pretty big hit. We got a caller here who this one that the caller is about to pick, this was the first one that popped into my head. This was the very first best debut album that popped into my head. And let's go with to Dan from the Fish Market. Hey, Dan.
Hey, buddy. How are you, Nick?
Good, man. What's up?
Good to talk to you. Remember me from Hagen's? I talked to you about a couple months ago.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
How are you, my friend? Okay. Yeah, I'm just sitting here snowplowing, doing what I do. And I always listen to you because I work at the airport in the morning, so I listen to you all the time, man.
Appreciate
You're great.
Appreciate it.
All right, man. Listen, Maiden's first album, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And you got Van Halen 1. How do you top that?
See, that's the first one that came into my mind when the topic of best debut albums, Van Halen's first album is the first one that came into my head.
Oh, it's killer. And Boston. Yeah, there we go.
Yeah, we mentioned Boston, yeah. And we mentioned the Cars. Those are all they're all very close in time. They came out right
sure
around the same time, late 70s. Absolutely.
Oh, 70s are a great time. Yeah. Great time for music, 70s.
Got it.
Hey, Nick, enjoy your show, brother.
All
Have
right, man.
Fun. God bless you. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, buddy. Take care. There you go. There's Dan from the Fish Market. Yeah, man. Van Halen? Come on. That first album? I mean, my God.
I mean, it runs down like a greatest hits.
It does. Absolutely. And my favorite song on that record, which is also my favorite Van Halen song, it was not a hit. My favorite song on that record is Atomic Punk. That song,
yeah, that's a great tune,
is a jam, and was not released as a single. I mean, the FM stations played it. You know, when they're playing their
right.
beat cuts, they played it. But that song, man, whoa. The house is going to blow up when you blast that one. So, let's see. Any others come into your head, Dan?
I was thinking, because we were just talking about the Police, and I think it's on this list because I saw it on there, is their first album, Outlandos.
Outlandos is great.
Yeah.
Outlandos is one of my favorite debut albums of all time. No, there's no question about it. Outlandos and more. And, you know, I mean, I think all of their albums are great.
Yeah.
All five of their records are phenomenal.
But kind of the purity of the sound that they achieved on that. Like, it's not kind of, later on they kind of get into,
yeah.
Is the songwriting was strong, but it was a little overproduced.
It was right around Ghost in the Machine. Ghost in the Machine was more, they experimented more with the sound and the technology on Ghost of the Machine than they did with the first three records. And then Synchronicity was a little bit more of a throwback to the first three records.
Yeah, they kind of found a happier medium.
Exactly,
there.
Yeah. But great stuff. The first Police album, man, you can't go wrong with that. How about this one, man? How about 10? Pearl Jam.
Yeah.
Unbelievable first album. Unbelievable. That comes in at number 46 on this list. I think that's a little low.
Yeah, I think so, too.
When their debut came out, Pearl Jam were competing with Nirvana in a grunge popularity contest they were bound to lose, yet 10 is a near-perfect record. Eddie Vedder's shaky, agonized growl and Mike McCready's wailing guitar solos on Alive and Jeremy push both songs to the brink and back again. Where Nirvana proposed a violent broke with classic rock, Pearl Jam worked in the tradition of The Who, giving estranged, forgotten Gen X refugees the arena stage that they deserved. Their influence has been incalculable, and Creed notwithstanding, pretty great. yes, Creed. 312-981-7200 is your phone number here, and we would love to hear from you. They also include Madonna's first record, which came out in 1983, if you can believe that. Madonna's first record came out in 1983, 36 years ago. Which means Madonna was, what, 11 when she released the when she released that album? No, she was young, man. I think she was like 18 or 19 when that album was released. The artist herself would later dismiss this post-disco pop on her debut as an aerobics album, she called it, but it didn't just succeed in introducing the most important female voice in the history of modern music. It also aged much better sonically than Like a Virgin, her blockbuster 1984 follow-up, loaded with hits like Borderline and Holiday. You know, Madonna's first album is great. I like it better than Like a Virgin, but the album for me, I mean, this is obviously Madonna's debut album is classic, and again, they're right, introduced us to a major, major voice and a major artist. But the album to me that where everything changed for my opinion of Madonna, because I happen to love Madonna, it was Like a Prayer. When Like a Prayer came out, I was like, oh wait a minute, because all the other stuff that she did was, you know, it was fine, it was kind of fun. Sort of dismissive, sort of dance music, club music, but then like the songwriting on Like a Prayer really jumped. I mean, the quality of the songwriting and the ideas and the songs themselves, the quality just shot up, and she made a record that was actually about something more than just dancing. So yeah, Like a Prayer was the one that did it for me. All right, let's take a quick break, and we'll talk more about this. Debut albums, what are your favorites? Your favorite debut albums of artists? 312-981-7200 is the phone number for Talk and Text. Get your thoughts in. Atomic Punk, man. My favorite song, my favorite Van Halen song of all time, but also my favorite song from Van Halen's debut album, and that's what we're talking about. We're talking about great debut albums, and we'd love to hear from you. We were talking music with Jim Ryan, so we thought we'd get the music thing going and keep it going. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio, 18 stories above the frozen river, which I'm looking at right now. Large, giant chunks of ice floating through the floating through the river. It's a lovely view. You know, I'm glad there's heat in this room. So there you go. Stay warm, everybody. Going to be dangerously cold today and tomorrow. So check in on people who might need help and elderly, and stay in and stay warm and be smart out there. So we'll get through this. By Friday, it's going to be 35 degrees outside, and we're going to think it's summer. So 312-981-7200 is the phone number. If you want to jump in here, Rolling Stone put together a list of the top 100 best debut albums of all time, and that's what we're talking about. A bunch of texts came in, and let's see what you guys are saying. And 804 area code says, Freewheeling Bob Dylan, Argent's first album, Nelly Furtado, are great albums that I've enjoyed. Also, an old album by a French-Canadian group called Harmonium, There you go. Let's see. 331 area code said a couple of very successful debut albums are Van Halen, 1979, and that's a great album, as we were just discussing, and Mariah Carey in 1990. Her music really changed, though. Mariah Carey, like her first, you know, and her image and everything really changed, because her first album was more like a vocal album. I mean, obviously she can sing. Mariah Carey can sing, but she was you know, not scantily clad, and wasn't doing sort of the funky stuff that she went on to do, or the poppy sort of hip hop stuff that she would eventually do. It was more just like a vocal, a concentration on vocals, with Vision of Love, which, you know, I remember that her being her first big hit. One of the best albums of all time, hands down, is Nine Inch Nails' Pretty Hate Machine from 1989. Great topic, Nick. That's Brian from West Chicago. Yeah, that's Nine Inch Nails' first record is huge. Those guys were huge. Kill 'Em All by Metallica, released in 1983. That's from Zach. We got three Kill 'Em Alls, but we got some Metallica fans who are listening this morning. Yeah, that album rules. Diamond Life by Sade was one of the best debuts, and it contained her first hit, Smooth Operator. That's another mentioned debut album. How about this one? Well, this is a great one. 770 area code, My Aim Is True by Elvis Costello.
Yes.
Phenomenal album. It says, although the Attractions are fantastic, they did not play on his debut. Still my favorite Elvis Costello LP. CD versions with extra songs are even better. That is a phenomenal record. A lot of Elvis Costello records are phenomenal. Yeah.
Well, then you could go this year's model as the debut of Elvis Costello and the Attractions, which is also a stellar album.
Elvis Costello can have two albums. But you know who was in the Attractions, right? Who played backup for Elvis Costello and the Attractions?
Who?
News. The News. They went on to be Huey Lewis and
the
News.
Oh, really?
Yeah. let's see. Disturbed, Down with the Sickness. That's what you have to do every time you... It's been Glenn and Evanston. He also picks Kill 'Em All by Metallica. 785 area codes. What about Chicago Transit Authority? Yes. That was when they were known as the Chicago Transit Authority, not just Chicago. 319 area code. That's Michael from Iowa. Says Whitney Houston. It had several hit singles, and that I know I will... How Will I Know is one of them. She made a big debut, Whitney Houston. Well, I mean, like, huge. She made a big splash when she first started out. Amy Winehouse, Back to Black in the U.S., but Frank in the U.K. That's Jill from Milwaukee. How about this? Here's Little Richard by Little Richard. That was in 1957 that was released on Specialty Records. Specialty Records. I came from a family where my people didn't like rhythm and blues, Little Richard told Rolling Stone in 1970. Bing Crosby, Pennies from Heaven, Ella Fitzgerald was all I heard. And I knew there was something that could be louder than that, but I didn't know where to find it. And I found it, and where I found it was with me. Richard's raucous debut collected singles such as Good Golly Miss Molly, in which his rollicking boogie-woogie piano and falsetto scream ignited the unfettered possibilities of rock and roll. Tutti Frutti still contains what is to be considered the most inspired rock lyric on record, a wop bop a loo mom ba lop bam boom. Here's Little Richard. How about The Who's first album? The Who sings My Generation. 1965, The Who released their first album, and that's 53, almost 54 years ago.
Yeah.
I know, because that's the year of my birth. But
Pete and Daltrey are coming to town.
I know. It's unbelievable. And they're selling. They sell out. Are they playing the UC? Are they actually? I mean, I think they're actually playing the UC, right?
No, I think they're playing in Tinley, whatever the name of that venue is.
Whatever the name of that venue is. I keep calling it the World or the Tweeter Center.
Yeah.
That's It hasn't been the world in like 25 years, and I still refer to it as a world. I don't even know what it is. Is it First Bank Village or something?
Put Hollywood Casino Amphitheater now?
That's what it is, yeah. The Hollywood Casino Amphitheater, even though it's not in
attached
Hollywood,
to a casino.
And it's not a casino. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so they're still going, man. Those guys are still going. But yeah, the Hoostings, my generation, they exploded out of the West London mod scene and pushed rock and roll to all new levels of intensity and volume on their debut. They're in maximum R&B mode, power-chorded reductions of James Brown ballads hurled forward by a manic freight train rhythm section. And of course, the classic song, My Generation, made a massive impact on people. All right. Okay, guys, what do you guys think? 312-981-7200. Best debut albums of all time. How about this one from 1985, Psycho Candy by the Jesus and Mary Chain? It comes in at number 45 on Rolling Stone's list. Scottish boys with amazing hair, terrible skin, leather pants, and black shirts buttoned up to the neck, surfing a wave of gloom and enjoying every moment of it. The Mary Chain's debut is a decadent masterpiece of bubblegum pop drowned in feedback. Psycho Candy proved a massive influence on both sides of the pond, inspiring shoegaze in England and the noisy strain of indie pop in the States. Bands such as The Pain of Being Pure at Heart and albums such as My Bloody Valentine's Noise on Noise Masterstroke Loveless are impossible to imagine without this album, this album's Jet Engine Mope. You know, Dan, I saw the Jesus and Mary Chain one time. They played the entire show with their backs to the audience. Some people were not happy. I thought it was hilarious.
Yeah, that's about on brand.
Oh, absolutely. All right, let's take a break. The news is coming up, and then I want to get back to you guys and your thoughts, and we're talking about the best debut albums of all time. Lots more to talk about, and we want to hear from you on WGN. 312-981-7200. News is up next. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m., as I am every weekday morning, 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. We were talking music a little earlier with Jim Ryan, and now we're going to continue talking music, and specifically what your favorite, the best debut album from any artist. What do you think are some of the best debut albums? 312-981-7200. And we're back here. And obviously, that would be Led Zeppelin from the fantastic album Led Zeppelin 1. And then that album, if I'm not mistaken, that album was recorded like in, I think it was finished in 2 days, recorded in 8 hours or something like that.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
And there was a stretch at the beginning where they released like three albums within like 18 months.
Yeah. Well, you're absolutely right, because it was my favorite Zeppelin album is Zeppelin 2. Zeppelin 2 is my favorite.
Yeah, me too, actually.
Of all Zeppelin records. I love that album. And it was recorded while they were on the road for their first big tour for the first album, and it was released months later. They were both released, I think the first album came out in 68 and the second album came out in 69, but they were just months apart. And then the third album was like 71 or something like that. Yeah. And then, of course, the legendary Zeppelin 4, which everybody, you know, because it's got Stairway on it. So, yeah, that's Led Zeppelin's first album, a classic. All right. Your favorites. What are your favorite debut records? 312-981-7200. Here's Jeffrey on WGN. Hi, Jeffrey.
Yeah, I was going to say these two groups had two debut albums. The first, the Beatles and the BJ Records, introducing the Beatles.
Right.
And then they came back with Capitol Records, Meet the Beatles.
Right.
And then the Moody Blues came out with Moody Blues number one in 65. Then they broke up, and they came back 2 years later with Days of Future Past.
Mm. Yeah, Days of Future Past is most people remember remember Days of Future Past more than the first album that you were talking about.
Yeah, well, you can get it. It's on their list of albums you can buy.
Yeah, yeah.
But I just thought I'd mention those two groups because they were unusual. But then, to me, they were the two best bands of the 20th century.
Well, the Beatles, you know, it's interesting because the Beatles' releases in America were different than their releases in Britain. The British versions of their albums, you know, some songs are not on, some songs are. You know, you got like Yesterday and Today, which is an album that exists only in America, where they took a bunch of songs from other albums and put it on that one. Yeah, so their releases in Britain were different than their releases here in America.
Well, BJ Records is an American company.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little capital, but BJ Records came out here in Chicago.
Right.
You know, and they were owned by a black company, right. You know, that released them.
Right.
But both those albums were American, so
okay.
American
right.
album.
Thank you, Jeffrey.
Okay. Thank
right.
you. Bye.
Yeah, the British versions of the Beatles albums are a lot different. And I have friends who are absolute completists who have like the American versions, they've got the British version, they got everything. And I remember when they re-released all the Beatle records on DVD or not DVD, on CD in the '80s. And it was a real big deal because they were not available on CD, and they were the CD versions that they released, like I think it was like they started releasing them around 86, 87, and they released, you know, all the titles. They were the British versions. They were the British versions of the albums, and then the other thing was that I remember them being mixed poorly. Like they split stuff up stereo wise, and some of the stuff that was recorded mono. And then a lot of they did weird things, you know, with, you know, what's coming in the left signal, what's coming in the right signal. They, you know, and people were angry. I remember when those CDs first came out, everybody was very excited because it was the first time any Beatles music was going to be available on CD, which was a relatively new format at that time, you know, in the 80s. People were very, very excited. It was a big deal. And then once they got them, they were like, what's with the mix on these things? So they have since corrected that, obviously. But you know, you're going to listen to you're going to listen to the Beatles on your computer anyway, or your phone. So that's so. All right. How about this one? Black Sabbath. Their first album.
Yes.
My God. And you know, I also love it because there's a song called Black Sabbath on it. So it's Black Sabbath by Black Sabbath from the album Black Sabbath. So that's always good. You know what else they have that? Bad Company.
Bad Co.
That's right. And then Talk Talk by Talk Talk from the album Talk Talk. And then if you want to cheat a little bit, Big Country. But the song is, because it's Big Country from the album Big Country, but the song is actually called parenthetically in a Big Country. So that. But if you want to cheat, you can throw that one in there. Let's see, Black Sabbath, here's what they say about Black Sabbath, coming in at number 44, again, I think too low on the list. While the hippies huffed flower power in 1970, this Birmingham crew preferred sulfuric fumes. The album that arguably invented heavy metal was built on thunderous blues rock. See The Wizard, which suggested the same sort of juke joint Lord of the Rings obsession Led Zeppelin had. But the title track, with its famously down-tuned Tony Iommi riffage, would define the sound of 1,000 bands. By the time Ozzy Osbourne sings, "My name is Lucifer, please take my hand on NIB," it's hard not to feel pulled over to the dark side yourself. Oh, Black Sabbath, I love you. And I've made this statement before. If you do not own the first five Black Sabbath records, your record collection is incomplete. That's just the way it is. that's the truth of the matter. How about this one that they include? Grace by Jeff Buckley. Blessed with an impressive pedigree, was the son of 60s folk pop icon Tim Buckley. And a voice of great range and deep character, Jeff Buckley was cursed with a perfectionist streak. Buckley had scrapped one stab at a second album and was gearing up to start over when he drowned in a freak accident in Memphis in May of 97, leaving Grace as the only studio album he completed to his satisfaction in his brief lifetime. It is a rich legacy and a transformative blend of Serpentine guitars and Buckley's beautiful singing. And, of course, Hallelujah, Leonard Cohen's, his version of Leonard Cohen's Hallelujah would go on to be pretty beloved. How about Oasis's first album, Definitely Maybe? That's a pretty terrific record. That's a good one. With a guitar firestorm that raged like Primo Stone's, this Manchester crew declared their intent on rock and roll star, a bold declaration released amid alt-rock's cult of the anti-star culture only months after Kurt Cobain's suicide. All bluster, bravado, and borrowed Beatlesisms, not to mention Bowie and T-Rex. It soars from hook to juicy hook, and when Liam's snarl slips up into a falsetto on Live Forever, it's clear that record, anyway, that this crew would. Yeah. Great album. Tons of texts here coming in. 312-981-7200. 815 area code. What about Cyndi Lauper? She's so unusual. Yeah, man, she exploded. And she brought professional wrestling to teen culture. And anybody who introduces the world, or the people who don't know him, anybody who introduces Captain Lou Albano to a whole new audience is all right in my book. And you know, the thing about Cyndi Lauper, here's the thing. When she first came out, I think a lot of people dismissed her because she was hanging out with Captain Lou Albano and she dressed all, you know, weird. I mean, her album, She's So Unusual, obviously. And Girls Just Want to Have Fun was just light and airy and poppy and stuff like that. I think people kind of dismissed her. She's got an incredible voice.
Yeah.
Cyndi Lauper can sing, man. And I know people know that now. But in 83, when her first record came out, it was like, oh, look at this goofball running around with professional wrestlers, you know, with the crazy hair and the crazy dresses and hats. But forget about the crazy dresses and the crazy hats. Listen to that woman's voice. An incredible voice. Let's see. 608 area code says, I'm going to have to say Pantera, Cowboys from Hell. Yeah, man, we got some metal for you. Yeah! We got some metal folks listening this morning. All those Kill 'Em Alls getting voted on. Stop Making Sense by The Talking. That's not their first album. That's their live album. Their first album is 77, which is a great album, by the way. A great debut album. How about this? 847 says, good morning. How about, this is Aileen, who says, the Foo Fighters' self-titled first album is amazing. Yeah, it is a great album. As well as the Beastie Boys' License to Ill, both staples in my playlist. Now, do you know what number one is on this list, Dan?
Yeah, I looked ahead.
It's License to Ill.
Yeah.
That's pretty amazing, man. I mean, I'm not knocking it, because it's a classic record, License to Ill, but it's number one on this list. Number one, according to Rolling Stone, the best debut album of all time is Beastie Boys' License to Ill. So, all right, more texts. If you want to call in, it's 312-981-7200, and we got more debut albums to talk about.
No sleep till...
Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And we're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. Dan Long filling in for Dan Chigrou, who's off this morning. So 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us. We are talking about great debut albums. This is a really fun list from Rolling Stone where they put it together. And we were talking music with Jim Ryan, and we wanted to continue talking some music. And we haven't talked about the debut albums, great debut albums. So that's what we're doing. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. All right. Let's see. We got more texts coming in. Let's check these out. 708 area code says Heart, Dreamboat Annie. Yeah, that's a great record. Great record. 608 area code says, stretching the rules, but I consider Back in Black AC/DC's second first album. Bon Scott had just died. They found Brian Johnson, and they were nervous. They went into the studio, and the first thing he did was nail "You Shook Me" on the first take, and the rest is history. That's from Carrie. I thought that band was done when Bon Scott died. I thought, that's it. That's the end of AC/DC. Where are you going to find another guy like that? Where are you going to find Bon Scott? Now, Brian Johnson is great. He's fantastic. I don't know if he's, he's not Bon Scott, but he's great. But I thought that I really truly thought that was the end of that band when he died. But then Back in Black came out, and I remember I was in high school when that record came out, and all the AC/DC fans, you know, were a little skeptical. They were like, man, like, you can't replace Bon Scott. And then Back in Black came out, and everybody went nuts. And that was one of those albums that everybody in high school had. Everybody in my high school had Back in Black. Everybody did. And it was played constantly. Like, if there was a house party or anything like that, Back in Black would definitely be music that they would play. You know what else is another record? A debut record. Ah, another debut record that I love, but most people would think is ridiculous. But it was probably just as big as Back in Black when it came out. And that was Asia's first album. Asia's first album was a monster. That album was a monster.
Supergroup Asia.
Yeah, Supergroup Asia. And that was another one that every single person in high school had it, played it all the time. How about Buddy Holly's debut album, The Chirping Crickets, 1957? February 3rd marks the 60th anniversary of the plane crash in Clear Lake, Iowa. God, it's 60 years. Wow.
We lost the 62, wasn't it 57?
Was it 62? It was, yeah, 57, yeah. Buddy Holly, the Big Bopper, Richie Valens, all lost in that. 214 Aircode says, what about Supertramp, Breakfast in America? That's not a debut album. Breakfast in America is like their fifth album, fourth or fifth album. It's their best album. I will say that. Breakfast in America is Supertramp's best album, but it's not their first. That's another one, Dan. Summer of 1979.
I own that album, actually. Yeah, I did not know chronologically where it fell, so I threw it on the text line.
It's about fourth, I think, third or fourth. But it was also their biggest album. I can say that. It sold the most because it was a massive hit. But in 79... that's all I listened to. I listened to that, and I listened to Cheap Trick by Cheap Trick and Budokan. Cheap Trick's first album, fantastic debut album. Breakfast in America. It's another reason Breakfast in America. I love that record so much, and I love so many songs on it. And another reason why Magnolia is my favorite movie is because you get to hear a lot of Supertramp in the bar that Donnie's hanging out in.
Yeah, yeah.
That I referred to that as the Supertramp bar, because there's nothing but Supertramp playing in it. And while Donnie's trying to get to know the bartender a little better, but Henry Gibson's giving him a hard time. One of my buddies, Steve, moved out. And he's an actor, and he moved out to L.A. for a little while, like most of my friends do. Then they eventually move back. Some have stayed out there, but I got a certain faction of my actor friends who went out to L.A., maybe stayed a year. And then went, no, and came back. He was one of them, my friend. And so when he moved out to L.A., he sent me pictures of him in the actual Supertramp bar for Magnolia. I can't remember what the name of the bar is, but it looked exactly the same. And I was like so jealous, was so jealous. And he said he purposely played Supertramp in the bar. And now, how often do you think that happens in that bar?
All the time.
You know what I mean? Like, somebody comes in, it's like, oh man, let's play Supertramp. We're in the bar where they played Supertramp and Magnolia. Let's play Supertramp. And it would only be dorks like me. You know what I mean? Because Magnolia doesn't have the biggest fan base in the world. You know what I mean? It did okay at the box office. You know, people think it's too long and it's pretentious and all that stuff. And no, because it's like my favorite movie ever. But only a dork like me would go into that bar and walk in and immediately just start playing Supertramp. So, you know, the person behind the bar would be going, oh, God, we got a Magnolia dork in here. Yeah. All right. Dave the Rave sends in his text. I like Steely Dan's debut, Can't Buy a Thrill. It's a great record. It was one of three albums of my first purchase of albums. From EJ Corvette, 90% of the rest of my albums were bought at Val's. Man, I remember EJ Corvette's. I bought records there, too. I definitely bought records from EJ Corvette's. Man, are we dating ourselves, Dave the Rave? Jeez. 352 area code, Alanis Morissette, Jagged Little Pill. Oh, God. Listen. Yes, it was a huge, huge success. She burst onto the screen and onto the scene in a really, really big way. But let me just say this. Working at a bar when that's on the jukebox, and it's the biggest thing in the world, you tend to not like Alanis Morissette very much. I mean, I don't like her very much in the beginning, in the first place. But you know, there were like six hits off that record, and they were played. I was bartending at Ginger's Ale House at the time, which is the corner of Grace and Ashland, which is now RJ something. I can't remember. It's still owned by the same guy. But anyway, when I worked there, man, oh, that Jagged Little Pill, every 5 seconds an Alanis Morissette song came on. Like, whenever I saw a group of girls come in, I'd be like, Oh, God, they're going to play a bunch of Alanis Morissette. I can just feel it. I can tell. And the other album that was on at the time when I was working at Ginger's, oh, was the Commitment soundtrack, the soundtrack to the Commitments. Oh, my God. And people would voluntarily play Mustang Sally. Like, they would actually go up there and play Mustang Sally. Now, look, I don't have anything against the movie The Commitments. I happen to love that movie. And I think the band is really great. And I love the classic songs that they are covering in that movie. But I don't want to hear it 19,000 times a night. And I especially don't want to hear Mustang Sally. Every night, Mustang Sally 53 times on the jukebox, followed by more Alanis Morissette. Ugh. Okay. All right, we got a break. We still have a bunch of texts coming in. We still have more of the Rolling Stone list of the best debut albums of all time, and yours, too, at 312-981-7200. The news is coming up after this.
Mustang Sally! Guess who better slow the Mustang down?
You're a bastard, Dan.
I was going to sit back, but I...
Let me just say one thing.
I'm easily swayed by bad peer pressure.
During the commercial... Oh, was that somebody put you up to it? Oh, you did? I see, because I saw Ernie in the hallway, and he's like, you know, he should play Mustang... That was all Ernie's fault, our engineer Ernie.
I wanted to send that that little snippet to Dan for out of context, but that's not really out of context.
No, it's not out of context.
That was straight up your
bastard. No, that was all Ernie's doing, man. That was all Ernie's an evil dude, man. I love him. All right. How you doing, everybody? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And, we are talking about... the top 100 debut albums of all time. Any others pop into your head, Dan? Are there any other ones that
what have we not covered yet?
Well, how about this one?
Old 97s.
The original. This guy, any chance, you are the president. Vic, you are the president of the Old 97s fan club.
Hitchhike to Rome. I love 9 out of the 15 songs on that CD.
Wow.
So for me.
That's a good average.
Plus, you had Jim Ryan on earlier, and he's a big fan of the Old 97.
Yes, he is. He is a big fan. But what about this one? Here's one. Greetings from Asbury Park.
Okay. Bruce?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's a...
Spirit in the Night.
Yeah. Great stuff. Let's see. The Chronic by Dr. Dre. Man. I am not... This is a very unpopular opinion that I'm going to throw out here, Dan. The Chronic, to me, marked the beginning of the end for hip-hop in my world. With the exception of a few artists. Because before The Chronic, I was all hip-hop. I was all about hip-hop. But that The Chronic, as landmark an achievement as that record is, and I'm not arguing its significance to the genre and significance to music in general and its popularity and what Dre did. But after that, everything sounded like that record.
Right.
And everything sounded like that record for a really long time, and everyone was guesting on different albums, and that still happens in hip-hop. That's a regular thing in hip-hop now. You don't even know who the artist is. There's 26 people on the songs. So for me, with the exception of a few albums post-Chronic, that was my interest in hip-hop dropped big time. But before that, I was all about it, man. So, but that's it. I mean, you can't deny. I mean, obviously, The Chronic by Dr. Dre should be mentioned if you're talking about, you know, great and impactful, great and impactful debut records. So, yeah. Hey, by the way, today, from 4 to 5, don't forget, from 4 to 5 p.m., you can go to McDonald's and get free bacon. Do you guys remember this? This is Free Bacon Day. Vic, that should have been your lead story.
I know. I thought about it.
But I don't know if you know this. You can go in and order anything, and they'll give you a side of bacon. You can go in and order Sprite, get a side of bacon. And that's from 4 to 5 p.m. You know what? You know, endure the cold. It's bacon. Just bundle up for bacon. You know, I bet McDonald's is really thrilled with this weather. They're not going to have to give away as much bacon as maybe they thought they would. Because I think, you know, 40 below wind chills are going to keep people off the street, even if it is bacon. You know, I saw this piece that they did where there's a university. I can't remember in what state, but they have a bacon vending machine. It's a bacon vending machine. You can walk up.
In Ohio State.
Is it Ohio State?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
They have the pizza vending machine too there, don't they?
Brilliant.
Yeah. They're just trying to keep everybody in good shape. Oh man. So I saw the Corden. It was on his show. I had his
the
show
idiot.
On before I left last night. It was the idiot was on, and he was talking about it. And I guess they have different types of bacon. So it's like a vending machine that's just not one type of bacon. You can get like a maple flavored bacon. You can get this kind of bacon. They have like 5-6 different brands of bacon. Okay, so if you get your free bacon. All right. 312-981-7200 is the phone number here. More texts coming in about great debut records. 816 area code says, hey, Nick, got to cast my vote for Bat Out of Hell by Meatloaf. Best cruising album. What I always want to hear, the whole album, if I put it in my CD player. That's Doc KC. Was that Meatloaf's first album, Bat Out of Hell?
Yeah, I looked it up earlier.
Wow. I didn't know that. Wow, that's pretty impressive, man. You know, that's pretty impressive.
I think another guy wrote all those songs.
Oh, yeah, Jim Steinem, yeah. He also wrote, Jim Steinem was one of the most dramatic songwriters ever, because all of his songs were big, glorious, soap opera, dramatic songs. He wrote, what the hell, he wrote the Turn Around Bright Eyes, Total Eclipse of the Heart. He wrote Total Eclipse of the Heart.
Really?
And you can tell. Like, you listen to that song, and it's like, well, it's not Meatloaf singing it, but it's the same kind of...
It makes sense, in retrospect.
Yeah. Let's see. About Liz Phair's Exile in Guyville, fantastic record. Fantastic record. ZZ Top, Trace Ombres. I have to include the Chicago Transit Authority album. It's a double record. They were a great band before they went WLIT. All right. This is Art by Montrose.
Okay.
What else do we got here? The first Lynyrd Skynyrd record, which is called Pronounced Lynyrd Skynyrd. How about Weezer's first album? Weezer just released an album of covers. without telling anybody. The Doors' first record from 1967 after blowing minds as the house band at the Whiskey Go-Go, where they were fired for playing Oedipal Drama, The End. The Doors were ready to unleash their organ-driven rock and roll to the world. On each song, we tried to have every possible arrangement, John Densmore said. So we felt the whole album was tight. Break On Through to the Other Side, 20th Century Fox, Crystal Ship, are pop art songs that were beyond top 40 attention spans. But The Doors hit pay dirt by editing one of their jam songs for airplay, that's Light My Fire, written by guitarist Robbie Krieger, when Jim Morrison told everybody in the band to write a song with a universal imagery. Yeah. Boy, that was a big record, that first one. See, now here, we were just talking about hip-hop, Dan. Here's a debut album that I can absolutely go with. 3 Feet High and Rising by De La Soul.
Nice.
That is a phenomenal record. At the end of the 80s, De La Soul rolled out a new style called Daisy Age, which stood for De Inner Soul, y'all. They led the Native Tongues posse, no gold chains, just samples, skits, jokes, and beats. This happily sprawling album is the sound of middle-class pals pushing rap's possibilities by expanding its subject matter and sonic makeup. Their ingenious producer, Prince Paul, bit everyone from P-Funk to Hall & Oates to Johnny Cash on tracks like I Know and Me, Myself, and I. De La Soul presented an optimistic eclecticism that served as a buoyant alternative to the rap scene's swaggering conformity. And they continued to be great. Another one in that same genre, I would go with the first PM Dawn album, too.
Oh, yeah.
Which is great. Those guys were phenomenal. Let's see. Here's Robert on WGN. Hi, Robert.
Hi. How are you guys doing?
All right.
I wanted to add something to this. Rolling Stone magazine was in 2003, came out with their 100 most greatest albums of all time. And in that article, you will find that they list that what the survey they did, that the most influential debut album since 1960 was Bob Dylan's debut album, which was not Freewheeling album. It's an album called Bob Dylan.
Mm-hmm.
That, and they have listed that as the most influential debut album since 1960. And if you go type that album in to Google and you look at the number of artists who also list that as to them the most influential, and I'll underline that word, debut album, it's that album, not the Freewheeling. That wasn't his debut album. He put out an album just prior to that called just Bob Dylan.
Okay.
You know who T-Bone Burnett is?
Yeah, of course.
You've heard he just was interviewed 2 weeks ago, and he listed that album to him as the most influential album by any American musical artist since 1960.
Right.
So that's his debut album.
All right.
And, yeah, so.
Okay. All right, thanks, Robert.
Just wanted to add that.
Thanks, buddy. There you go. The original Bob Dylan record. How about Big Star's first album?
Alex Chilton.
Oh, man. You know, I saw Alex Chilton. Did I ever tell you this?
No.
When I was when we were in New York doing Vinyl Shop, summer of 99. This is one of my favorite New York memories of all time, and you'll understand why once I tell you the whole story. But we were there for 3 weeks doing Vinyl Shop at the Fringe Festival. And we were looking for something to do. Like we didn't have a performance on a Wednesday or something like that. We were going to do something in the afternoon, then probably like go out to eat and go to a bar. Go to a bar, which is what we did every night while we were in New York back then. But so we were looking in the Voice. We were looking in the Village Voice, and we saw that they had free concerts every Wednesday afternoon, like a lunchtime free concert. Every Wednesday afternoon between the Twin Towers, so they would set up a stage between the Twin Towers. And so we saw that Wednesday we had off, it was Alex Chilton. And so we went, and I'll never, I mean, this is just, the memory is bittersweet, obviously, because we were sitting in front of the World Trade Center between the two towers watching Alex Chilton, and then who was great. And then Alex Chilton got off stage, just started walking through the crowd. Went up, shook his hand and stuff like that. It was amazing.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite New York memories ever was sitting. And Big Star is a great band. I mean, a song like 13. I mean, it's just... Their greatest hits is like there's nothing that's not great on that record. That is just such a great band. So, okay, let's break here and then we'll continue.
Greetings, girl, and welcome to my world of phrasing right up to bat. It's the Daisy Age, and you're about to walk top stage, so wipe your lotto on the mat. Hip-hop love this.
Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we're talking about the best debut albums of all time, De La Soul. And we got some texts here. Phone lines are open if you want to jump in here. 312-981-7200. Let's see. 312, area code Tom Waits, closing time. Also from the 312 area code, Ozzy Osbourne, Blizzard of Oz, jams. You know, it's funny, when Ozzy left Sabbath, actually when he was booted from, when he was booted from Sabbath for a little bit of a weird behavior and some mind-altering addictions. I thought both of those entities were going to be gone. I thought they were both done. You know, much like AC/DC when Bon Scott passed away, I thought they were both. I thought, like in this regard, I thought Sabbath was done and I thought Ozzy was done. But then Sabbath got Dio. Sabbath got Dio, and Ozzy got Randy Rhoads. So they continued. You know. And that, and obviously, then they've reunited 900 times, and they've toured, and all that stuff. But yeah, I really did think that they, I thought both entities would be dead. But 714 area code says, has there been a mention of the best debut, and sadly, their only one? That would be Blind Faith. That's a great album. Another supergroup. We mentioned a few supergroups earlier, but Blind Faith, and they only did have that one album. Can't Find My Way Home is one of my favorite songs. 630 area code, Violent Femmes. Oh, man, yeah. They just said, the 630 area code says, that's iconic. Yes, it is. Violent Femmes, man, I can't believe Violent Femmes didn't get mentioned earlier. How did we not mention Violent Femmes before this? And then REM, Murmur, basically defined alt rock. I used to, you know, I'm not an REM fan at all. In fact, I hate REM. And mostly to do because Michael Stipe makes me nuts. But I used to, the early REM, I actually don't hate. Like, I love Radio Free Europe. I think that's such a great song.
Yeah.
One of the reasons why I like it is because I can't understand a damn word that Michael Stipe is saying. If you listen to those early records, what is he saying? What the hell? I don't even know what the lyrics are to Radio Free Europe, and I love it. But I'll tell you something though, man. You know, somebody of my age, that was a, because when Murmur came out, we were all college aged when that thing came out, and everybody in my peer group went nuts for REM. And it was at the right time for our age group. You know what I mean? Like, you know, you're in your 20s and you're being influenced, and you're in college and you want to take in new, you know, you want to take in new adventures in music and stuff. When Murmur comes out and that's the hot new album, that's it.
Yeah.
So, I was never on board with REM. I never did get in. And by the time that losing my religion and all that, and the shiny happy people and all that crap, I was like, no, please.
Well, Shiny Happy People would have pushed you over the edge had you not already been.
Oh, my God, that song. Oh. All right. How about Rage Against the Machine? Their first album. People love that. I'm not a big Rage Against the Machine guy, but they're right there. That's an album that people loved. Made a big impact. All right. Oh, here's another good hip-hop one, Dan. Paid in Full, Eric B. and Rakim.
Very nice.
Fantastic record. And Eric B. and Rakim rule. Paid in Full, great record. Great debut record. 785 area code says, just thought of another one. Marshall Crenshaw's self-titled debut album, one of my 80s favorites. 479 area code, did anybody mention Music from the Big Pink by the band? Oh, yeah, no. No, that way it has not been mentioned. And then, of course, the first Doors album, which we just talked about. 312 area code, Traveling Wilburys, another super group.
Yeah.
Rage Against the Machine, 773 area code, 708 area code. Nick, what about Saga? Yeah, their first album's okay. It's not, I wouldn't say it's one of the best. Worlds Apart was their fourth record. That was the one that that really put them over. Because they had the debut album called Saga, then they had Images at Twilight, and then they had Silent Night with a K, and then Worlds Apart. I know way too much about Saga. Way. But people who listen to the show know that already. Saga. Here's one. Comes in at number 28 on the Rolling Stone list, the B-52s. The debut of the B-52s sounds like a bunch of high school friends cramming all their running jokes, goofy sounds, and private nicknames into a new wave record. We never thought it would get past our circle of friends in Athens, Georgia, said Fred Schneider. It turned out nobody could resist the band's campy, arty funk, or eccentric sequels, or squeals, and bouffant hairdos of Kate Pearson and Cindy Wilson. And Pearson also defined the band's sound by playing organ. They played toy instruments, and their thrift store image was inventive and as colorful as their music, with which Rock Lobster pretty inventive and colorful. You ever see the B-52s? You ever see them live?
I've never seen them live. I've seen them on Saturday Night, like old SNL reruns, I think.
They're great live. They're really, really great live.
That Kate Pearson can sing, though.
Yeah, she's great. She and Graham Parker and my friend Bill Janovitz from Buffalo Tom, they toured back in 2003, and they played Martyrs, and it was the three of them and a backup band, and it was the lost songs of Lennon and McCartney that they toured.
Really?
Yeah, and they played all these songs that were either like B-sides or never got any attention or never were released, and they were all written by Lennon and McCartney. And it was a fantastic show, and she killed. She killed. So that was I thought that was really a fun idea.
Yeah.
To get together and let's go out on tour and do some Lennon and McCartney. And they played Martyrs too, which is a fantastic room.
Yeah. So that's a cool venue for that.
It is. How about Run DMC's debut? Yeah, that was big, but not quite as big as the album after that. Vampire Weekend has been listed as a on this list. How about Ready to Die by Notorious B.I.G.? Yeah. We mentioned My Aim is True. All right. Let's break here, and we'll come back, and we've got more to talk about. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Having some fun here talking about the best debut albums of all time. And if you want to text or talk, it's 312-981-7200. The news is next. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 o'clock. It's Tuesday morning, and it's going to be cold for the next couple of days, everybody. Just bundle up, stay smart, stay warm, check in on the elderly and people who might need help. If you don't need to go out, don't go out. And we'll get through this. By Friday, we'll be fine. So 312-981-7200 is the phone number on WGN. We've been talking about great debut albums by artists. And going down the list here, Rolling Stone, they throw in Elvis Presley. But the thing is, this is the Elvis Presley album came out in 1956, but he was releasing singles in 1955. So it wasn't like he didn't have a full-length album, but he did have singles. And he obviously made a name for himself with those singles. In November of 1955, RCA Records bought Presley's contract, singles, and unreleased master tapes from Sun Records for $35,000. Wow, for $35,000. I mean, that's a lot of money in 1950.
Yeah, what is that in 2019 dollars, I wonder?
Well, they made it back. I'm sure they made it back. His first full-length album came out 6 months later with tracks drawn from both Sun Sessions and from further recordings at RCA Studios in New York and Nashville. There wasn't any pressure, said Scotty Moore, guitarist Scotty Moore, of the first RCA Sessions. They were just bigger studios and different equipment. We basically just went in and did the same thing that we always did. Blue Suede Shoes was one of the big tracks that was on his debut album. How about Are We Not Men, Are We Devo? Devo's first album. Can't go wrong with that. Yeah, they were great. That was actually, I'll tell you what, that Devo, that was actually one of the best concerts I've ever seen. I saw Devo at the Riv. And it was recently, it was like 10 years ago. So it wasn't like when they were, you know, they had gone back out on the road.
Yeah.
And I think it was 10, 12 years ago, something like that. And it was like a reunion sort of a tour because Mark Mothersbaugh has been doing soundtracks and stuff and solo stuff.
Yeah.
So they finally all got back together and, you know, they were much older. They had gray hair. They still had the stupid costumes on, the stupid Devo.
With the
yellow
the red,
jumpsuits
like,
and the
hats.
Yeah, with the flower pot looking hats on their head. And they were great, and they killed. They killed. And I went in, you know, going, oh, this will be fun, because it's Devo.
Right.
This will be fun. It'll be nice to see these, you know, the old dudes back on stage and everything. And they were unbelievable. They were seriously. It was one of the best concerts I've ever seen. You know, it was another great show that I saw. I saw these guys late in their career, and I regret it because they were so good. The Ramones. I saw the Ramones in 93, maybe?
Okay, so that was kind of close to the end.
Yeah. Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And I was like, I want to go see the Ramones because they're the Ramones, and I can tell people, you know, I saw the Ramones.
Yeah.
Again, at the Riv. And they were unbelievable. They were unbelievable. And there was no talking between songs. And nothing. It would just like one song.
2 minutes.
They'd be
in and
one,
out.
Two, three, four. And you know their songs are short.
Yeah.
I think in the hour and a half that they were on stage, I think they played 505 songs. I'm not really sure, but it was nonstop, and they really got that place going. Like everybody was going nuts, and it seriously like they didn't. There was no banter at all. They were just up there to rock.
What was the lineup around that time?
I don't remember. How many of them were dead at that point?
That's what I mean. Who was
93? I don't know.
Joey would have still been there.
Joey was there. Yeah. Joey was still alive. So, yeah. That's funny. It's funny because they're such an iconic band. I mean, you know, in their first album. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're such an iconic band, and you know, I've had PJ Souls on the show a few times, you know, because she's come to Flashback Convention,
yeah.
You know, because she was in Halloween and, you know, but she's in some seminal movies, you know, like seminal movies for people my age, because she was in Carrie, she's in Halloween, she's in Stripes, and she's in Rock and Roll High School. So it's like, she's a queen, man.
Yeah.
PJ Souls is a queen, and she told great Ramon stories. Like, she, you know, because she got to know them, obviously, really, really well from doing, you
filming
know,
the,
rock and roll.
Rock and roll, yeah.
So, how about the Go-Go's, Beauty and the Beat? That's a classic debut album. Absolutely. Yeah, I remember when that album came out. That was another one that was really, really big. And they opened up for, I saw them open up for The Police on the Ghost in the Machine tour, and it was great. Okay, here's your top 20, according to Rolling Stone. The top 20 debut albums. Number 20 is Joy Division, Unknown Pleasures. The heartbreaking 1979 set was to punk what Velvet Underground and Nico was to psychedelia, a reveal of the seething dark underbelly of a cultural movement. Joy Division. And then they would be reborn as New Order. Let's see. Number 19, College Dropout, Kanye West. That was a huge album. I can't stand Kanye West, but it was huge. Number 18 on the list is Murmur by R.E.M., which we've mentioned already. Number 17 is Please Please Me by the Beatles from 1963. The Beatles recorded 10 of the 14 songs on their British debut album at EMI's Abbey Road Studio in just over 12 hours on February 11th, 1963. For productivity alone, it's one of the greatest first albums in rock. The Beatles had already invented the bracing new sound of a rock for a rock band, an assault of thrumming energy and impeccable vocal harmonies. So Please Please Me. Number 16, The Cars, which we mentioned a couple of times already. No band has ever knocked out a debut so packed with straight-to-car radio classics. We used to joke, Elliot Easton, the late, great Elliot Easton. He's alive. It's
Ben Orr is dead.
Benjamin Orr. Oh, I'm sorry, Elliot. We used to joke that the first album should be called The Cars' Greatest Hits. The Cars was arty, punchy enough to be part of Boston's new wave scene, yet so catchy that the nearly every track, My Best Friend's Girl, Just What I Needed, was like a brilliant single. The very idea that cool refinement and feathered hair, Heartland appeal, could exist together was minted here. Bands from Weezer to The Strokes and to Fountains of Wayne are unthinkable without this album's example. And if you weren't around in 1979, how big that record was, it's hard to describe how big that album was. I mean, it was hit after hit after hit. Number 15, Arcade Fire with Funeral from 2004. Number 14, Reasonable Doubt by Jay-Z from 1996. The studio was like a psychiatrist's couch for me, Jay-Z told Rolling Stone. His debut is full of the hustler's dreams and laments. It established Jay as one of his generation's premier rappers and included the lyrically brilliant 22s. 22 twos. So, Reasonable Doubt by Jay-Z included here. Here's Phil on WGN. Hi, Phil.
Hey, how's it going, buddy?
All right, what's up?
Yeah, debut album I was thinking of was MC5, Kicking Out the Jams.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, legendary band. Legendary band, and they did not make the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame this year. They were nominated, but they didn't get in.
Yeah, well, yeah. Hopefully down the road.
Okay. All right, Phil. Thanks, buddy.
You're welcome.
Okay, take care. They didn't get nominated. They didn't get in, did they? I know they were nominated, but they didn't get in.
Yeah, I thought they got in by now.
Did they?
Maybe...
No, they were nominated this year. I know that they were nominated this year. But I don't think they made it in. Hey, by the way, I just want everybody to know that Def Leppard is in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and Warren Zevon isn't. I just wanted to mention that. Bon Jovi's in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and Warren Zevon isn't.
Yeah, they were nominated in 02, 16, and 18.
And they didn't get in.
I guess not. Inventing punk rock was not enough of a...
They're a legendary and influential band. Legendary. Here's a great one. Oh, this is one of my... I can't believe I didn't bring this one up. The Pretenders' first album. Oh, my God. What a great record. What a great record. I have to say this, and I truly believe this. I don't think there is any cooler chick in rock and roll in the history of rock and roll than Chrissie Hynde. The coolest woman to ever be in a rock and roll band. The coolest rock and roll chick in the history of the music.
I think she came out with an album like a couple years ago. She was on some talk show, and she looks and sounds the same.
Exactly. Exactly the same. And she was married to the dude from Simple Minds for a while. Did you know that?
And Ray Davis,
and
right?
And Ray Davis, yeah. Can you believe that? Yeah. Yeah, the first Pretenders record is just... it's a masterpiece. It's a masterpiece. One of the best debut records of all time. Yeah. All right. Let's take a break here for some weather, and we'll come back and we'll wrap all this up talking about the rest of the best debut records of all time. And we want to hear from you at 312-981-7200. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here, 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, and here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, and coming up, the stories that matter. with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom here on WGN Radio. We've been having some fun talking about the best debut albums of all time. Lots to choose from here. Some got mentioned that weren't included on this Rolling Stone list. Here's a few more from the list, and I'll give you the top choices for that. And again, phone lines are open if you want to jump in with your thoughts on great debut albums. 312-981-7200. Here's another one. Got so many good debut albums. That's what I'm learning this morning, is that there are a lot of really great debut albums. New York Dolls. First New York Dolls album. That's a classic. Classic, produced by Todd Rundgren. Hey, can you see? I don't think Todd Rundgren is in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Can you look that up? Because I just want to remind everybody, Def Leppard is in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and I don't think Todd Rundgren is. And Bon Jovi's in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, but I don't think Todd Rundgren is. Which is unbelievable.
Yeah. Todd Rundgren is not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
How is that possible? We talked about this before. Todd Rundgren, I mean, that's just insane. He's been nominated. I know he's been nominated, but he has not been voted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I don't even understand sometimes what's happening in the world. All right, here's another debut album. How about Boy by U2?
A couple people had that one.
Yeah, that's a great album. I remember when I saw when we went to go see the Police, they kicked off their Synchronicity tour at Comiskey Park, at the old Comiskey Park, and this was the lineup that day, full lineup that day. It was Ministry, but this was when Ministry sounded like I don't know if you know this or not, but Ministry's first album, they sound like Depeche Mode.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I got a quick story I can tell you. I don't know if I've ever told you this story. The first Ministry album is called With Sympathy, and it sounds like new wavy, sort of like techno-y, dance, Depeche Mode-ish kind of stuff, and I love it. I can't stand the stuff that they do now, but I love the first record because I like the new wavy, dancey Depeche Mode kind of thing. And so Al Jorgensen, as you know, who's the lead singer and lead maniac of Ministry, they did that record and he hates it. Like, Al Jorgensen hates that record. No mention of it. Doesn't even want to talk about it existing even. And it's not, you know, the record company made them do it because that was the kind of music that would sell at the time and not the kind of stuff that they were going to do, the hardcore stuff that they were going to do and eventually would do. I have a friend who passed away a few years ago. His name was Joe. And Joe loved the first Ministry album. Loved it. And Joe said, hey, listen, that's one of the greatest albums of all time. Joe, you've heard Joe's stories, right?
Yeah.
So Joe became a... was at one point a producer. He worked and produced, and he produced like some house music and things like that. And so he was at a studio, and they were recording. It was a studio downtown, and they were in Studio A, and they were recording. Ministry was in Studio B, recording at the same time. You know, and Joe hates everything that followed with Sympathy. Hates Ministry. Hated the hardcore stuff. Hated it. Only acknowledges the first album. So Joe goes into the break room between, you know, sessions there. He walks in. He's going to get some coffee or something out of the vending machine. He's standing there, and then Al Jorgensen comes in. Now, I don't know if people know Al Jorgensen has had some troubled problems with some drugs, and he's a maniac, and he's got crazy dreads. He looks like a lunatic, and he drives around going 100 miles an hour down and he's in the city and all that stuff. And he's known to be a not-too-friendly guy, okay, angry kind of a guy. So Al Jorgensen walks in. And Joe looks at him, and he sees him, and he goes, hey, Al Jorgensen. Like he needed to, hey, Al Jorgensen. And Al Jorgensen just kind of looks at him. You could tell he's had a few of something, and he was not pleased that Joe said, hey, Al Jorgensen. Kind of looks at him, and then Joe takes a beat, and he goes, listen, what the hell happened after that first album? And so Jorgensen, like, looks at him and then spits at him. And turns around and walks out, and Joe goes, hey, that's a little rude. But it's funny because he didn't do it. He was like Joe was sincere. Like, what happened? You know, because,
yeah.
Because he really loves that first record. And Jorgensen, and you can't mention that first album to Al Jorgensen. You can't. You're at the risk of getting your face smashed in. But yeah, hey, listen, what the hell happened after that first album? When he told me that story, I was like, you said that to him? He's like, yeah, what the hell? Why not?
But I'm looking at a picture of Al Jorgensen from that era.
Yeah.
And he looks like New Wave guy.
Oh, you mean from the first album?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. As opposed to what he looks like now.
Yeah.
Now he looks like a guy from Battlefield Earth. He looks like a cast member of Battlefield Earth. But yeah, no. He was totally, he had the hair. Anyway, the lineup at that show that I was talking about, the Police, they kicked off their Synchronicity tour at Comiskey. So it was Ministry. It was The Fix. It was Ministry, The Fix, Flock of Seagulls, Joan Jett, and The Police. Joan Jett got booed off the stage. Because listen to the other acts. They're all Flock of Seagulls, The Fix, Ministry. And Joan Jett's awesome. But she got booed off the stage. Nobody wanted to hear Joan Jett. Everybody wanted New Wave. Very strange.
The crowd at Comiskey Park was into New Wave.
Yeah. Oh, listen, there was 1983, man. You know, I mean, yeah. So, and it was packed, too. All right, here are the rest of the best debut albums. The Clash, the first Clash album, which we mentioned Clash before. Nas with Illmatic. Patti Smith with Horses. Music from Big Pink, the band. The Strokes, Is This It? Number 8? Look, I like that album, but come on, man. Nevermind the Bullocks, here's the Sex Pistols, comes in at number 7. Number 6, please, Straight Outta Compton, N.W.A. Number 5 is the Velvet Underground with Nico. Number 4, as we mentioned earlier, Appetite for Destruction. Number 3, Jimi Hendrix, Are You Experienced?
Sure.
Yes. Number 2, The Ramones. And then number 1, as we mentioned before, License to Ill, The Beasties. Interesting list.